to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
America, welcome to our show here today. It is Wednesday, middle of the week, the hump day. We're just cranking right through here. The situation out there just getting weirder and weirder. Our phone number on the air, if you want to join us, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan's in the control rooms, twiddling the dials and watching out for us here and guiding us through the ultra-high frequencies here. Now, normally this show and my website, we don't do celebrity gossip kind of stuff. But I feel I must comment. As you know, over the last several days, there's been this big hue and cry. You know, where's Governor Sanford? And, you know, kind of like, where's Wally? And everybody's looking for Governor Mark Sanford. And where was he? And his car was here. And this is, and where he's going on, so forth and so on. And it was a real big news story. In fact, it began to look suspiciously like a manufactured distraction here. Meanwhile, everyone's saying, who's running the state of South Carolina, and nobody's there in charge, and actually things seem to have gone along very well without the governor in office. That's a very dangerous precedent. I think the other governors ought to be looking at that. If they leave their state for a long period of time and things actually start to get better, oh, the voters are going to be thinking, maybe less government really is the way to go. So forth and so on. Anyway, so the mystery is all over, and Mark Sanford shows up, and apparently he was on an ocean cruise, out on a big cruise ship someplace, with a woman, not his spouse, and just grabbing a little ocean-going nookie. And normally I wouldn't care who is doing who, because it doesn't affect my life, but I really felt I had to wonder, if he's having an extramarital affair, which we can presume he is keeping secret from his wife, and he just vanishes for 7 days and doesn't think people are going to start asking questions about where he went and what he did, I mean, isn't the whole point of having an extramarital affair that it is kept secret? Maybe not. So many of them are being exposed to public scrutiny. And like I said, I don't care. If he wants to go off and do whatever he wants to do, you know, and his wife isn't going to shoot him dead for it, you know, then fine. But it just strikes me as very odd why this guy would be having this affair and then go and do something absolutely guaranteed to generate the maximum amount of media inquiry and focus on him. I mean, he's having to step down from this governor's association that he's the president of. He's probably not going to lose his governorship over this, and his wife is probably going to stand next to him and say, yes, we're going to move on in the true style of political whatever. But, you know, if Sanford is attempting to catch up to Bill Clinton's record, he's got a long, long, long way to go. And this is really not the way to be aiming at the White House at this point. So I don't know what was on his mind, but it almost seems like the way he set this up, he wanted to be caught, or he wanted to announce it, or for some reason, he wanted a big publicity thing. Like, is he going to put out a video, how to successfully cheat on your wife or something like this? I'm not sure. But it just strikes me as very odd because, and I'm speaking in the abstract because I don't fool around on my wife. I don't have enough energy just for her. I don't need any more to be taxing me at this point. But if I was going to be doing something like that, I think I would be a little bit more clandestine about it all than to simply vanish for an entire week and not have, you know, made some arrangements for, say, oh, I'm going out of town to a conference in Rangoon or some such nonsense like that. Anyway, it just struck me as very, very odd, and as it is, it's a non-story, except that it's still the headline, you know, GOP governor admits he's having an affair. Big deal. Statistically, half of them are. Okay? That's the reality. Half of all married people, male and female, are catching a little on the side. That is just life. Let's move on. All right. Turning to the economy. The Dow was basically another push here. You know, basically ended up pretty much close to zero here. But I want to set the Wayback Machine to Monday, where we had that 200-point loss. And at the very end of the day, there was this sudden spike downward. And I know I commented on the website, and I'm not sure if I mentioned it here on the air, but it turns out the reason for that downward spike at the end of the day's trading, somebody, an unknown party, apparently dumped over $7 million worth of J.P. Morgan stock on the market in one huge lump. Somebody was doing a bailout. It may have been somebody hitting the panic button, and they did it at the very end of the day to prevent the panic from spreading, and who knows. But it was interesting because it was enough of a sale. It was enough of a sale to show on the graph that there was that sudden downward spike just before the closing bell. And now we're finding out, you know, the insiders, we keep getting reports, the insiders, the people on the inside of the financial industry, they're using every upward rally to dump their stock. It's basically, it's a dump, it's a bump and dump. And if you don't know what I mean by a bump and dump, have you ever gotten those emails that pretend to be from some brokerage that has mistakenly included you on their mailing list and saying, this stock is hot, it's a rocket, it's going to go and blah, 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 blah. And you look at the stock, and yes, it's trending upward. And people get suckered into buying the stock through their little online E-Trade accounts, and they'll buy the stock. What's going on is it's a scam because the scammers will find an almost worthless stock or a company that's struggling, and they'll buy a huge block of it, which will start the upward trend on its price. And then they'll send out all these emails, or they'll bribe some financial reporter to talk up the stock, or some other device to sort of give it some artificially created buzz. And people start buying in, and it starts driving the stock price up, and it's going up and up and up. But remember, it's all market forces. The company's value isn't, the worth isn't there to support the price of the stock. So the stock gets driven up really high. The original scammers drop their block. They dump their huge block that they bought in. And they make a huge profit. And the instant their sale hits the market, the price collapses and everybody else is left holding worthless stock. And very often, the actual company involved will be driven out of business by this game. It's very destructive, but it's very, very common. It's another one of these little scams that the SEC seems to be turning a blind eye to. But it goes on all the time. But what we're seeing here is every time the stock market is being driven upward, we're seeing the insiders, the people who are on the inside of the financial institutions, the brokerages, the banks, the insurance companies, they start unloading their own stock in their own company very quietly, covertly, to get out from under it. That's what's going on. A lot of crooked things going on in the stock market. Meanwhile, Warren Buffett was on CNBC today and basically says the economy's in a shambles. I hope they're not paying this guy for this kind of expert advice, because we're giving you that same advice for free. It is in a shambles. And he goes on to say, same thing we've been telling you, no signs of recovery yet. And there's no progress. And the reason is obvious. The way the government is, you'll pardon the expression, fighting the economic war is counterproductive. You're not going to restore a functioning economy by looting the American people to drop on the bankers and brokerage companies that created the mess in the first place. The money has to flow the other direction. Right now, in the last 6 months, the U.S. government has added $100,000 in debt to every household in the United States of America. If they'd done it the other way, if they had given $100,000 to every household in America, there would be no foreclosures. People would be up to date on their mortgages. There'd be no mortgage crisis. There'd be no subprime crisis. If they'd given every household $100,000, we'd be up to date on our credit card payments. There'd be no credit crisis. We'd be buying new cars. There'd be no collapse of the automotive giants. We'd be going down to the store and buying new cameras and flat panel TVs. There'd be no retail crisis. The money has to flow through all levels of our society for the economy to be healthy, and that is the bottom line. And everything the government is doing is grabbing the money in, away from the people, and giving it to the banks and insurance companies and the brokerages and bailout executives and all the rest of that stuff. And then they wonder why the economy isn't functioning anymore, because the money has to be at all levels of the society. That's when an economy works. What Barack Obama and his administration and his policies have done effectively is try to deal with an infection in the body by putting a tourniquet around the neck to try and keep all the blood up in the skull. Guess what? It's not going to work. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about the economy and some other issues. We're going to get back to Iran. That thing is still being fought tooth and nail in the propaganda war. 800-259-9231, and we'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the economy all over the place, and we've got something like 12 states, I think, which, if they don't agree on budgetary measures of some kind in the next couple of weeks, they're literally going to stop functioning. They're not going to be able to write checks. They're not going to be able to fund any operations. They're literally hovering on the edge of complete shutdowns. And California is one of them. And it is a major, major problem because their tax revenues are falling off. We know federal tax revenues are off 44% from last year. We know states are averaging almost a 30% decline since last year. I mean, the money is just gone. It is just gone. When you give people's jobs away to other countries, they make less money. You can tax them less. I don't know why our government wasn't thinking about that when they started giving these tax breaks to corporations to ship manufacturing to other countries. It's like nobody in that entire swamp near the Potomac River was thinking, you know, if we drive everybody back to minimum wage, there's going to be less money out there for us to tax. Maybe it's the lead pipes. I understand they still have a lot of lead pipes in those really old buildings in Washington, D.C., and maybe it's killing off their brain cells because they're really not understanding that if you want to function an entire nation and you're going to tax the people to do it, it is the job of the government to make sure we have the highest earning potential possible so that there's more for them to tax. Just doesn't make sense any other way. If you drive people into poverty, of course they don't have anything to tax, and then it all starts shutting down here. Now, there is an issue that people are still not wanting to deal with because it's so politically dangerous, and you get people screaming racism, and you're filled with hate and all the rest of that, and it has to do with the illegal immigration problem, which is a major problem in California. It's a major problem in Colorado. It has been deteriorating for a very, very long time. I mean, you know, some years back, you know, you had something like, you know, just a few million people. It was a very small homeless, illegal immigration population in California. And today it's millions and it's millions. And, you know, you've got all of these illegal immigrants and they're overwhelming the schools with their children, the anchor babies, the medical facilities. And unfortunately, they're also totally filling the California jails, which is another burden on the state. And Schwarzenegger was talking about letting these prisoners out of jail and then deporting them. Frankly, they should have been deported to, you know, right at the start. When you catch them and they're not a citizen, throw them back over the border. That's where they're supposed to come from. But right now, here's the bottom line. And let me step aside here and say, I have no problem with anybody who wants to come to this country if they do so legally. It shows questionable taste. All things going on right now. I would think it would be more appropriate for them to be seeking someplace else to live right now. But if they want to come here and they want to go through the procedures, fine and welcome and come on in. Let's see if we can get you involved in our economy somehow. But the illegals are a problem. The total cost to California is $10.3 billion annually. Now, the California debt is right now running at $24 billion. So the illegal immigrants are responsible for about just slightly less than half of California's economic woes. And it's just something that we've got to finally deal with. Because why are the legal residents being taxed into poverty to pay this huge, huge cost? And then they're being told, well, we don't have enough money left over for services for those of you who are legal residents. Remember the story we ran a while back about how students, legal resident students from the state of California were having to sue the state and the regents of the California university system in order to basically get a tuition that was as low as that being given to the illegal aliens. I mean, can you believe that under the California system, illegal aliens paid less for college education than the legal residents? That's not fair. Hopefully the courts will agree on that. But it is a terrible situation. And during these times of extreme economic hardship, we got to take care of Americans first. We really do. And that's just, you know, it's survival. You know, we can set aside political philosophy. We can set aside about North American Union. We can set aside about all this stuff. The reality is it's time to think survival, survival. So anyway, let's switch over here to Iran. And I know we've got a caller waiting on the line. We're going to get to you here in just a minute. But I wanted to cover two issues first of all, because interestingly enough, I have been putting a lot of material out on Twitter to counter the ongoing propaganda war, to try and create this illusion that the people running through the streets of Tehran and breaking store windows and setting fire to things are somehow fighting for democracy, and the guy who actually won the election and the pre-election polls and the exit polls and all the rest of it is somehow the bad guy because he won the election. Okay, so it's a propaganda war, and we've identified numerous stories saying the CIA is in there. The Iranian government is saying they've arrested a arrested a group of people. They found them running this planning center out of one of Mousavi's offices where they were coordinating where the riots were going to be, where the disruptions were going to be. It is not a spontaneous uprising of the people of Iran. It is a staged rent-a-ruckus, literally an ongoing attempt to foment a revolution and bring down the government. And they've arrested them, and they're basically, or the government of Iran is going public saying they have found evidence, hard evidence of foreign involvement in trying to cause this ruckus. So here's the deal. One of the pro-Mousavi, pro-Shah posters on Twitter has basically been spamming Twitter with these messages encouraging people to block me. Say, you know, block him. Don't look at anything he's got to say. You know, he's a pro-Ahmadinejad stooge, you know. And for them to go out in there and say, block him, block him, block him, I thought these were supposed to be the guys who were pro-democracy, like freedom of speech, and here they are using the very sorts of tactics they're accusing the government of Iran of doing. Oh, they're censoring. They're preventing freedom of speech. They're not letting us be heard. And they're here. They're using the same tactics. So, very odd. Now, as we mentioned earlier in the week about the rally in front of the White House, somebody is putting out these flags of the Shah, the flag of Iran that was used during the time of the Shah. We got an email from one of our What Really Happened readers who was up in San Francisco. They saw somebody in vans just handing out the flags for free to anybody in the protest just so it would be seen flying. That's why they all look alike. They all come from the same factory. Somebody has paid to make up the flag of the Shah. This flag has not been used in Iran for 30 years. Somebody is paying to put these up. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Albert in California. Aloha, Albert. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I've been listening to you for a while. I really respect you. And Albert, I'm really disillusioned with what you're saying right now. I was born in Iran. I have family there.
Yes, I can tell from the accent.
Yeah, well, okay. You find that I'm not from Iran? I don't know.
It does strike me as a little odd. But please continue. We're almost at the end of the segment.
I moved here when I was two, so I grew up here.
Okay.
It's really, I'm thoroughly disgusted by your defense. Well, probably you'd be hard-pressed to find a more repressive, disgusting regime that kills and tortures its own people. And you're defending
them.
The Shah was bad, too.
All right, we're at the end of the segment. Thank you very much for the phone call, Albert. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And, you know, I should have asked Albert how old he is, because if he left Iran when he was 2 years old, which, I mean, first of all, he's no better informed about what's going on in Iran than anybody else living in the United States and subject to ABC, CBS, so forth and so on. But if Albert is 32 years old or thereabouts, then his family would have left Iran right about the time the Shah was kicked out. And like the Cuban exiles we have down in Florida who still yearn for a return to the glory days of Batista. There are many Iranians in the United States who were part of the Shah's government or part of Savak. And we know from the numerous stories that we have documented and linked to whatreallyhappened.com, they have been organizing for the last several years to try and overthrow the revolutionary government, the Iranian government, and bring the monarchy back. It's out there. Somebody paid for all these flags of the Pahlavi dynasty. And getting back to this person who wrote us from the San Francisco demonstration, basically asked the demonstrators who'd been given these flags to wave, do you know that's the flag of the Shah? They had no idea. It was just somebody was there giving them a free flag of Iran to wave, and they were waving it in front of the cameras. And they didn't know it was not the current flag of Iran. They didn't realize it was a 30-year-old flag from the royal family. So somebody is out there pushing this really, really hard. And, you know, it's an overthrow. It's an orchestrated overthrow. Now, the police in Tehran announced last night, and you're not going to hear this on any of the American television networks, but they announced last night that they had raided an office in one of the buildings being used by Mousavi's campaign and had located this headquarters that was set up with all of these organizing materials and lists and information and money and so forth and so on, and that all of the disruptions, all of the violence in the streets was being directed out of this office. And they've arrested a bunch of people and confiscated equipment and information, and they've announced that they have found hard evidence of foreign involvement in a plot to overthrow the government of Iran. And I want to step back here and respond to something that that Albert implied, and certainly this person who's out there saying, please block Mike Rivero from Twitter. I'm not defending Ahmadinejad. I'm defending the people of Iran to have a democracy. Because the people who are screaming they're fighting for democracy, that's exactly what they're trying to overthrow. And we saw the same thing back in 1953. The Iranians elected Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh to rule Iran for their benefit, to take care of the Iranians, and he proceeded to do so, which angered American and British oil interests, who then arranged for his overthrow and to put the Shah back on the throne. And it was a very terrible time. And there's no question about it. We found some documentation about some of the tortures the Savak were using. And after reading what the Savak were doing to the people of Iran, ready to cut the Guantanamo guys a little more slack. Actually, not really, but you get the idea of where I'm going here. So that's the situation that's going on. I mean, today the Iranian Interior Minister came out with a formal announcement. Western intelligence is behind the riots and the unrest. And, of course, we have Barack Obama only a week after admitting that the U.S. was behind the 1953 overthrow of Iran's elected government, coming out and saying, it's patently absurd. How dare you suggest the U.S. would do such a thing? We don't do that kind of... Yeah, actually, we do. Mossadegh in Iran, Ardenz in Guatemala, Allende in Chile. It just goes on and on and on and on. This is exactly what the U.S. does, time after time after time. So apparently, the government of Iran has found some hard evidence, basically showing foreign influence. That's hardly a surprise. We have had numerous articles and statements here. Cy Hirsch had written in the New Yorker that, you know, the U.S. was increasing covert activity to overthrow the government of Iran in complete defiance of the 1981 Algiers Accord. And they'd funded it to the tune of $400 million. Maybe that's where they got the money for these flags and everything. We're going to go to the phones. Michael in Georgia. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to bring up about when they took the Iranian hostages and how Carter came out and was talking about the what had happened in 53 with the CIA and was referring to it as ancient history and, you know, basically kind of irrelevant, and how much that's just like what Obama had just done, that he won't apologize for the CIA role in Chile.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly right.
Deja vu. And I also kind of wanted to bring up about the Carter Doctrine and about how he, the people that were in Afghanistan were going into Russia, and the Russia invading back into Afghanistan was a response as much as anything. They were under attack from Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's the actual beginnings of the Afghanistan war are very much not as we here in the United States are being told. We were already in there meddling around, and again, there was a treaty violation. And Russia was basically, we had reached the point where Russia said, okay, we got to draw another line in the sand here because the Americans are coming into our satellite provinces and they're trying to take them over. And that's really what it came down to. And yeah, I saw where Obama said, I'm not going to apologize for the CIA in Chile. And, you know, we got the same situation. I mean, we got an apology for the theft of Hawaii, and then they turned around and said, we're not going to do anything about it. We stole it fair and square, and we're going to keep it. And that's the way the government operates. But the bottom line here is the fact that the CIA has been doing this all along for the last half century is well known to anybody in the world who is willing to take a look for the hard evidence. What is going on in Iran today is an exact replay of what happened in 1953. They're not even trying to conceal that it's a replay. All they've got is a lot of money and a lot of useful idiots that are going to go out there and flood Twitter with a lot of garbage or call into the radio shows to say, no, 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 the Iranian government is bad. They're horrible. They're doing all sorts of terrible things. They're tearing the tags off their seat cushions. You know, they're pouring the tea before the milk and all these other really bad things. And you should just go over and stomp them into the ground and let us have the government afterwards. That's really what it is. It's overthrow. It's overthrow. Okay. Did the moon come out? Have you grown furry in a bark now? Okay, I guess Mike just hung up. So, anyway, there was a dog there in the background. Now, I want to turn back. Speaking of propaganda, the young lady, the poor, unfortunate, innocent victim caught in this thing, her name is Nada. And, or rather, she's being called Nada. It's not actually her name. The word Nada is basically a word that means the path or the voice. And it is basically they made her a martyr. She's the branding. She's the label. Think about the Nike swoosh to sell shoes. Okay, Nada is the branding to sell the overthrow of the Iranian government. And part of the reason they're latching onto her so hard is because they understand they're not getting the traction saying that the election was rigged simply because the pre-election polls and the official results and the exit polls all match up and show an overwhelming majority for Ahmadinejad, the same majority with which he won his last election. There is actually no evidence of vote fraud. So they're out there kicking over trash cans and smashing windows and saying, give us the country or we're going to break everything. And the police are saying, okay, we're going to treat you the way the LAPD treated the Rodney King rioters. And, of course, the media says, oh, no, no, those are freedom fighters. The Rodney King rioters, they were just looters. Yes, bash their heads in. But in Tehran, those are freedom and democracy fighters because they hate the people we hate, and therefore we will be sympathetic to them. So anyway, getting back to Nada. It was kind of interesting because you've got the video of Nada in the street. It's been played all over the world. It has had huge saturation. It is being pushed everywhere they can. The pro-Mousavi Twitterers, or the twits, if you will, have variations of those clips as their icons going on their little Twitter accounts. They're pushing it very, very hard. But then you have the video of the Palestinian protester who was shot in cold blood, and nobody cares about that. It's not a symbol. It's not important when protesters in Palestine or Iraq get shot down. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I was just checking on Twitter, and the young lady, she's a technical writer by profession, the young lady is out there saying, you know, I'm a brutal thug, and I'm, well, all these really things. And of course, you know, no links, no substantiating documentation. It's just a screed. And what she's responding to are all the posts I'm putting up there with links to the supporting documentation that shows, yes, the United States government, the CIA, in collaboration with many other governments, including Israel. Have you noticed how Netanyahu came out today saying 75% of Iranians want regime change? I can just see Bibi Netanyahu in Tehran with a clipboard saying, tell me, do you favor regime change? How about you? Do you favor? I think 75%. He pulled that number out of thin air. I mean, come on. Nobody believes a number that ends in a five. That's common knowledge here. So anyway, this lady on Twitter, she's just screaming that I'm all these horrible things. And I think it's just calling attention to the fact that they're losing the battle in terms of facts and knowledge and truth and logic and law. It's like there's this old lawyer's wisdom. When the facts are against you, argue the law. When the law is against you, argue the facts. When the facts and the law are against you, call the other side names. And we seem to have hit that stage, at least within the Twitterverse. Now, getting back to the situation with NADA, we have this video of NADA that the corporate media is plastering everywhere as a symbol of the terrible oppression of the people of Iran. And they're basically putting it out there to the same extent they were putting out the story about the stolen incubators in Iraq, which turned out to be a hoax. Now, I'm not saying that this young lady is not dead. Okay, but we don't really know who shot her. The Iranian government is saying it was another terrorist group that may have hit her by accident while aiming for somebody else. We don't know who shot her. We're being told it was the government of Iran. But then, heck, we were told Saddam had nuclear weapons as well. So, to heck with that. But the point I wanted to make is, this girl, NADA, her video is everywhere. They're standing on her bloody corpse to push their agenda. Meanwhile, we had the video actually catching the shooting death of Bassam Abu Rahma, a Palestinian nonviolent protester near the apartheid wall, shot dead on camera. Nobody wanted to run the video. CNN wouldn't run it. Fox wouldn't run it. ABC wouldn't run it. NBC wouldn't run it. CBS wouldn't run it. It wasn't important. It wasn't a symbol. It's only a Palestinian. And when Rachel Corrie, an American, was run over by an Israeli bulldozer twice, he ran over her, then he backed over her to make sure that she was dead. That got hardly any coverage on the American media either. There was no outrage. She was not a symbol. It was just, oh, well, these things happen. But NADA, I mean, she's already on T-shirts. They're going to be marketing her all over the place. She is the new face, and they're pushing her as hard as they can because they realize they're not gaining any traction on this claim that the election was rigged. So they're trying to rebrand the overthrow of the Iranian government. It's no longer about whether the election was rigged or not, because there's no evidence that it was, at least not by Ahmadinejad. Maybe Mousavi was the one with the motive to try and rig the election. He was trailing 2-1. But that is now a dead issue. So now they're going to try and rebrand the overthrow. We've got to bring down the democratically elected government of Iran because of this dead girl, and nobody knows who really shot her, but they're a convenient scapegoat. So classic propaganda tactics here. Now, interestingly enough, in Forward, the Jewish Daily, on their website, May 16th, 2003, we're doing a little flashback here. Forward, the Jewish Daily, was admitting in 2003 that there is a coalition of conservative hawks, Jewish organizations, and Iranian monarchists, meaning the people who were powerful and rich under the Shah, and they long for the good old days of the Savak torture screens filling the marble hallways surrounding the Peacock Throne. But in 2003, Forward was admitting there was a group of these hawks, Jewish organizations, and the people from the Shah organized, pressuring the White House to step up efforts to bring about regime change in Iran. That's it. They've been planning an overthrow by force or by guile since 2003. And let's see, there's a direct quote here, and this is showing you how tightly they're linked together. This is Pouya Dayanim, president of the Iranian Jewish Public Affairs Committee in Los Angeles. And he said, quote, there is a pact emerging between Hawks and the administration, this is George Bush administration, Jewish groups and Iranian supporters of Reza Pahlavi, the exiled son of the former Shah of Iran, to push for the regime change. This is not a spontaneous expression of the will of the people of Iran. It is a coup d'etat. It is an attempt to bring down the democratically elected government of Iran by subterfuge, by deception, by force, by assassination, by any means they can think of. And if you go along with it, if you're part of it, you bear the guilt for that crime. There is no justification for going into other people's countries and bringing down their government in order to put a new government in that is more suitable to your own interests. Would you like it if it was being done to the United States? If some other country had come in here and was actively taking down politicians that they didn't like in order to put in politicians that were going to agree to work for that foreign government. What am I saying? It's already being done. Do you like it that AIPAC is in here hand-picking congressmen for the Congress so that they'll always send your tax dollars to Israel? Do you like that? Are you really okay with that? Because that is what the government of the United States and Israel and the Shah are trying to do to Iran. They want to take out the government that is there that the people voted in and put in a new government based on the Shah. It will be a monarchy. There'll be no democracy left in Iran. Because you can't vote the king out once he's the king. That's what they're trying to put in there. And as I said, this lady on Twitter has proven they're really not very democratic at all. She's trying to convince people to block my tweets on Twitter. She's trying to convince people to shut me out any way that they can. That's not democracy. If you're going to go around saying you're pro-democracy, then you have to act like it. You've got to walk your talk. And part of democracy is freedom of speech and expression, the ability to exchange ideas and have an open public debate. And if you don't allow that, if you only want your point of view out there and everybody else has to be blocked, then you're not pro-democracy. You're another budding tyrant. You're another dictatorship in the making. You are another Shah on the rise. Because the Shah wouldn't allow anybody to speak out critical of his agenda. And so by their actions, these so-called pro-democracy people in Iran are truly known. They're not pro-democracy. They just want to take the old government out and take over the place because they think it's going to be more money and goodies for them personally. And they are no better than the government they claim to be replacing, certainly in regards to their intolerance of any other information flowing into the debate other than what they decide should be out there. They're not acting very democratic at all. They're overturning an elected government. They're trying to reverse an election. They're trying to silence their critics. These are not pro-democracy. These people wearing the green banners right now, they are dictators. Because they act like it. They're like the true believers that got us stuck in Iraq the first time around, Desert Storm. We know what's best for the rest of the country. They're too stupid to be allowed to vote for their own government. Henry Kissinger used to say that about Chile to justify the overthrow of Allende and the installation of Pinochet, that the issues in Chile were far too important to leave to the Chilean voters. Talk about arrogance. When you decide that you are smarter than an entire country and that that gives you the right to go in and overthrow their government. You know something? I don't care if the Iranians are all idiots. If you believe in democracy, you let them run their own country their own way. You don't sit out here and spend $400 million to go in there and bring their country crashing down so that you can pick up the pieces afterwards. That's it for our show. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 o'clock Central Time. Until then, stay safe, be well, be skeptical, be angry, be outraged at what's being done with your money and in your name. And until tomorrow, aloha, America.